Imagine the number three, just, the concept of the number itself.
Right, just a pure weightless abstraction.
Exactly. Now imagine that the number three has its own literal gravitational pull.
That it casts a shadow.
Yeah, that it has an actual planetary orbit, and that if you put it next to the number four, they might snap together with the actual force of a molecular bond.
It sounds completely like science fiction, or, I mean, like a fever dream.
It really does, because when you think about pure mathematics, there is usually this comforting sense of detachment,
Oh, absolutely. You write out a clean algebra equation on a whiteboard, and it just sits there.
Right. It doesn't weigh anything. It doesn't cast a shadow. It doesn't need to breathe.
It's completely divorced from physical reality.
But today, we are taking that exact assumption that math is just this abstract, weightless thing, and we are completely shattering it.
We really are.
Welcome to the deep dive. We are looking at a set of fascinating notes today, a document simply titled FLT Structural Impossibility.
And our mission here is wild.
It is so wild. We are taking one of the most famous, purely mathematical puzzles in human history, Fermat's Last Theorem, and rewriting it as a literal catastrophic failure of physical laws.
To understand the sheer scale of the paradigm shift in these notes, we really have to look at what Fermat's Last Theorem actually is.
Right, just a quick refresher for everyone.
For over 350 years, the brightest minds on the planet were haunted by a deceptively simple equation: a to the power of n plus b to the power of n equals c to the power of n.
Just a few letters on a page.
Exactly. The theorem states that if you are looking for whole non-zero numbers for a, b, and c, there are simply no solutions if your exponent, n, is greater than 2.
Which drove people crazy for centuries.
Right. And when it was finally solved in the 1990s, mathematicians used incredibly dense abstract number theory, things like modular forms and elliptic curves.
But the source material we are looking at today just throws all of that out the window.
Completely out the window. It introduces something called the extended elementary function framework.
And it relies on a highly theoretical concept known as conditional collapse theory, or CCT.
Yeah, the text uses CCT to essentially build a bridge that completely eliminates the gap between abstract numbers and tangible physical reality.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because I know conditional collapse theory sounds incredibly intimidating.
It sounds like a mouthful,
But
definitely.
I promise you, you do not need an advanced math degree to follow along with us today.
Not at all.
Our goal is for you to experience a massive aha moment about how the universe fundamentally operates. Because this document isn't just trying to solve a math problem.
No, it's proposing a completely new Rosetta Stone for reality itself.
It introduces 10 new mathematical functions, and they are intimately inspired by the physical universe.
And we really need to understand this new Rosetta Stone first. The foundational idea here relies on what the text calls Axiom E2.
Axiom E2.
Right, and Axiom E2 proposes creating these things called elementary structural complements.
Which sounds very technical, but it's actually super elegant.
It is. The authors map the physical laws governing atoms, molecules, and celestial bodies into a very specific mathematical classification system.
They use the same system that defines the quadratic Gaussian integral, right?
Exactly. The core premise is that any continuous mathematical function can have a structural complement, provided it undergoes a specific type-preserving transformation.
If I'm translating this into something we can easily visualize, it feels like they are building a brand new periodic table.
Oh, that's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah, but instead of cataloging static elements like hydrogen, carbon, or gold, we are cataloging the fundamental update rules of the universe itself.
The verbs, essentially.
Yes, the verbs. We're creating a table of the physical actions that make reality happen. Equations are like molecules built out of these foundational verbs.
Viewing these functions as the verbs of reality is the perfect way to contextualize the update perspective detailed in the notes.
It just makes it so much easier to grasp.
What's fascinating here is the sheer scale of this new framework. It attempts to span from the macro to the micro, all the way out to the cosmic.
Let's start with the macro.
So, looking at the macro level, the text introduces the inverse square integral, or the ISI.
And this represents Newton's law of gravity, right?
Exactly. It maps the classic 1 over x squared pull of gravity into negative x to the negative 1. It acts as the mathematical update rule for gravitational potential.
So that's the gravity verb.
Right. Then, operating right alongside gravity, we have the orbital path complement, or OPC.
The OPC takes the angular velocity of planets like the literal speed at which they sweep around a star and maps it into actual physical path length.
Use the elliptical trajectories, yeah.
So we have gravity pulling things in and the orbital path of planets swinging around stars. Those are the big visible forces.
A macro, yeah. But then this table zooms way, way into the subatomic level.
Which is where things get really weird.
The notes detail the shell probability integral, the SPI.
Imagine an atom as a fuzzy, vibrating cloud of probability where an electron might be.
Just kind of buzzing around.
Right. The SPI mathematically captures the exact boundaries and the contained charge of that fuzzy cloud.
And alongside that electron probability cloud, we have the quantized jump operator, or QJO.
Because in quantum mechanics, electrons don't smoothly slide between energy levels.
No, they teleport. They make sudden discrete jumps.
The QJO takes these tiny, abrupt, discrete collapses and maps them into a continuous mathematical state.
Which, honestly, bridging the gap between the choppy, jumping quantum world and smooth, continuous mathematics is a massive architectural achievement on its own.
It really is. And the framework scales right back out to the very edges of the cosmos.
It does. The space-time curvature primitive, or SCP, captures Einstein's concept of massive bodies warping the fabric of space.
Then there is the thermal core equilibrium, the TCE.
That function defines the violent balance happening inside a star.
Like the inward crushing force of gravity battling the outward explosive pressure of nuclear fusion.
Exactly, that constant tug of war. The notes even include the dark matter distribution integral, the DMDI.
Just to mathematically account for the invisible mass holding the outer edges of galaxies together.
We are looking at a brilliant reimagining of physics here. The framework encompasses 10 fundamental rules in total.
Including the luminescence flux accumulator for solar energy output and the atmospheric pressure primitive for calculating planetary air density decay.
These 10 physical rules are a profound way to categorize the mechanisms of the universe just on their own.
But the source material takes this cosmic periodic table and it wields it as a weapon against Fermat's last theorem.
Which brings us back to A to the N plus B to the N equals C to the N.
The notes introduce a total paradigm shift here.
They really do. In this extended elementary function framework, Fermat's last theorem is not treated as a number theoretic statement.
No, the text literally calls it a structural collapse failure.
We have to look closely at the formal equation the source provides to understand this shift.
Let's do it.
The text translates Fermat's theorem into a very specific physical triad. It states that the ISI of A to the N plus the OPC of B to the N must equal the MBC of C to the N.
So what does this all mean? I really have to push back on this concept for a second, because this is where the sheer abstraction starts to bend the mind.
Go for it.
Are we seriously saying that a simple abstract integer like the number 4 suddenly has actual gravity?
Well,
does the number 5 have an elliptical orbit? I mean, how can a number, which only exists in our heads, possess a physical mass or trace a path through space?
Okay, the integers themselves aren't suddenly transforming into physical boulders or planets.
Right, that would be insane.
In this framework, the numbers are being subjected to the mathematical structures that govern physical laws.
Okay.
Think back to the acronyms from our table. The ISI is the inverse square integral.
The gravity verb.
Right. In this translated equation, the integer A is accumulating an inverse square pull. It is behaving mathematically as a gravitational potential.
Okay. So
the OPC is the orbital path complement. So the integer B is tracing an elliptical path. It's an orbital trajectory.
And finally, these two forces combined must equal the MBC of C to the N.
Yes.
The SBC, that's the Morse bounding complement, right?
That's the one.
That function is inspired by the potential energy of diatomic molecular bonds. It's literally like two magnets snapping together.
So integer C represents the binding completion or the molecular glue of the entire system.
The ultimate claim of the nerds is that no three integers, no triple of A, B, and C can ever exist where their combined gravitational pull, orbital path, and molecular binding form a perfectly balanced, closed structural system.
Not when the exponent is greater than 2. The universe simply will not allow those three specific physical architectures to harmonize.
Making a claim that mathematical numbers rip themselves apart physically is beautiful and honestly kind of poetic.
It is very poetic.
But proving why it fails requires us to look under the hood at the mechanical engine of the system. We have to look at the concept of entropy.
The document relies heavily on the conditional collapse theory, or CCT, to explain this mechanical failure.
Right, because without CCT, we're just making metaphors.
Exactly. In the CCT framework, a mathematical problem isn't just looking for an answer.
It is a dynamic system desperately trying to shed its entropy and reach an equilibrium state.
The text states that the understanding of an equation collapses into a clean solution only when the entropy of the structural complement space drops below a certain point.
They denote that mathematically as H of t, right?
Yes, H of t. And that entropy must be less than or equal to a specific collapse threshold, which they denote as theta collapse.
Let me try to translate these ordinary differential equation terms into something visceral.
Please do.
Imagine an unsolved equation as a turbulent, raging river.
Okay, I like that.
The numbers, the variables, the physical forces we just talked about, they are the water, constantly churning, splashing, and crashing against the rocks.
That churning energy is the entropy, H of T.
Finding a mathematical solution, that collapse of understanding the text mentions, is like the water finally flowing into a calm, deep resting pool.
The churning just stops.
It finds its equilibrium, the entropy drops below the threshold.
In ODE-CCT terminology, we're basically looking for the rate of change of the system to stabilize.
To calm down.
Right. The water finding a whirlpool that spins in a constant, perfectly stable circle would be called a limit cycle. It's a periodic, repeating solution.
And what if it stops completely?
The water settling into a completely flat, motionless pool would be a fixed point, which is a total collapse to a single, stable answer.
But the notes explicitly state that for Fermat's last theorem, when your exponent n is anything greater than 2, the river never finds a resting point.
Never.
The entropy H of t is always greater than the collapse threshold. It never finds a limit cycle, and it never hits a fixed point.
It just constantly boils and diverges.
The notes specifically point out that the Taylor-Token expansion has no collapse path.
Which is a really big deal.
The Taylor-Token expansion is basically the math world's way of forecasting the future steps of an equation, right?
That's a great analogy, yeah.
And the forecast here says there is no future where this system calms down.
The system simply cannot shed enough entropy. The physical forces are fighting each other.
It's just a constant battle.
The text formulates this impossibility using not just the triad of gravity, orbits, and molecular bonds, but all 10 elementary functions simultaneously.
Wow, all 10 at once.
Yeah, it creates a massive equation of structural impossibility.
That sounds intense.
It attempts to add up the gravitational pull of A to the N, the orbital path of B to the N, the fuzzy electron shell stability of A to the N.
The metric expansion of space-time near C to the N.
Exactly. The blinding black body radiation of A to the N all the way through the thermal core balance and the dark matter distribution.
In a solvable, stable system, all of these physical updates must sum to a constant, right?
They must. They must satisfy the complementarity relation.
Which dictates that a function of x plus its exact complement must return to a balanced state of x.
But for any exponent larger than 2, the universe cannot balance the combined mass energy.
It can't balance the black body emission rate. The text says the luminescence flux accumulator simply isn't powerful enough to cool the mathematical system.
Even the atmospheric pressure primitive, which models the exponential thinning of air density, cannot absorb the chaotic interaction of these integers.
The universe literally runs out of mechanisms to contain the energy.
The natural question to ask next is, if the universe fundamentally fails to contain this equation, when exactly does the physical breakdown occur?
And what does that collapse actually look like?
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the text doesn't just throw up its hands and say, it's impossible.
It shows us the exact agonizing breaking point.
It walks us through the exponents step by step.
Let's look at the table provided in the notes. When the exponent n equals 1, we have a simple linear case. A plus b equals c.
At n equals 1, the system operates seamlessly.
No.
None. The inverse square integral functions normally, the orbital path traces a standard loop, and molecular binding reaches a clean saturation point.
The river finds the calm pool.
The entropy collapses below the threshold. It solves.
Wait, so if n equals 3 eventually fails, what happens at n equals 2?
That's the sweet spot.
We know that a squared plus b squared equals c squared represents Pythagorean triples, like a 3-4-5 right triangle, which works perfectly in classical geometry.
Right, it's a staple of geometry.
If these numbers are now acting like planets and gravitational forces, doesn't that mean an exponent of 2 has to be some sort of perfectly balanced solar system?
Your deduction is spot on. At n equals 2, the inverse gravity of A, the elliptical orbit of B, and the molecular bonding of C achieve total harmonic balance.
It just clicks.
The structural complement space reaches perfect equilibrium. The complementarity relation holds firmly.
The planet swings around the star, perfectly tethered by gravity and bound by molecular force. It solves beautifully.
But then we hit the notorious n equals 3.
The wall. The equation becomes a cubed plus b cubed equals c cubed.
This is the historical wall where Fermat's last theorem begins.
What exactly happens to the physical mechanics here?
At exactly n equals 3, the entire architecture fractures.
Just shatters.
The notes specify that the orbital path complement, representing the planetary motion of b to the n, becomes oscillatory.
It loses its stable, closed, elliptical nature.
Simultaneously, the Morse binding complement representing the molecular bonds of c to the n becomes oversaturated.
Wait, why does an exponent of 3 cause a planet to suddenly wobble out of its orbit?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, raising the integer to the power of 3 introduces a third dimension of mathematical weight or complexity that a two-dimensional elliptical orbit simply cannot contain.
It forces the mathematical trajectory to warp.
Imagine a physical planet in a standard orbit. For n equals 1 or n equals 2, the planet completes its year.
It travels its elegant ellipse and returns exactly to its starting point, perfectly balanced by the gravity of its star.
But at n equals 3, the mathematical weight throws the velocity off. The planet overshoots.
Ellipse warps and spirals outward.
The orbiting planet of b to the n never returns to meet the gravity of a to the n and the molecular binding of c to the n.
It traces a path that simply cannot close.
The physical forces are literally ripping the system apart from the inside.
The gravitational pull cannot rein in the overconstrained speeding orbit, and the molecular barn energy becomes completely flooded, unable to find equilibrium.
The river breaches the dam and just keeps running.
And this divergence accelerates as the exponent grows. At n equals 4, the notes say the orbital path becomes entirely non-closed and the molecular binding becomes completely unstable.
This specific mechanical failure leads to the grand formal conclusion of the CCT interpretation.
It states it unequivocally, right?
It does. The inverse square integral and the orbital path complement of any two non-zero integers can never be structurally complemented by the Morse binding complement of a third integer when the exponent exceeds 2.
It's an absolutely incredible intellectual journey we've gone on today.
It really is.
We started with a stack of highly theoretical notes about one of the oldest puzzles in pure math.
And we translated abstract weightless integers into a framework of 10 fundamental physical verbs.
The rules of gravity, planetary orbits, quantum leaps, and space-time curvature.
And we used those structural forces to prove that Fermat's last theorem is actually a story about planetary orbits failing to close.
About molecular bonds overflowing with energy and solar systems flying apart into the void.
The document profoundly recontextualizes centuries of mathematical thought.
It's mind-blowing.
The final lingering implication from the source material is that Fermat's last theorem, when viewed through this extended elementary function framework, proves that our universe of physical laws has absolutely no equilibrium point for cubic or higher integer interactions.
We usually think of mathematics as a pristine, detached language that simply describes reality from afar.
Just observing it.
But these notes suggest that math and the physical universe are locked together in a very delicate structural dance.
They are inseparable.
Which leaves you with a pretty wild final thought to ponder as we wrap up today.
I love a good wild thought.
If our universe's physical laws fundamentally forbid these cubic integer interactions from ever finding equilibrium, if the simple equation a cubed plus b cubed equals c cubed literally breaks the mathematical models of gravity and molecular bonds, does that mean a hypothetical universe where Fermat's last theorem is solvable would require entirely alien physical laws?
Oh, wow.
Right. To have simple whole numbers that actually solve that equation, would you have to exist in a reality completely stripped of gravity, without planetary orbits, and devoid of the molecular bonds that hold our very bodies together?
A universe where the math functions flawlessly, but matter as we understand it cannot physically exist.
It completely changes how you look at a simple string of numbers on a chalkboard.
It really, really does.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the structural limits of reality.
Thank you for listening.